This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. I am your host, Matthew Lanier, and I am joined by Chris Fikes, as always. Hello, Chris. How's it going? How's your winter break?
Oh, it's fantastic. I've got a lot of geeky stuff done that you would really love.
It seems like it. I think your last message to me says you have some Inception Linux stuff going on, like Linux running inside of Linux, running inside of Linux. So,
running containers through Podman, not actually Docker.
So you've got some interesting projects happening at the house this week. The only thing interesting I've done this week is I've switched my secondary browser from Google Chrome to Mozilla Firefox, and it has a lot to do with what we're going to talk about today. But I really like the new Firefox. I know we've talked about that before, but I just forget how good it is because I don't use it that often.
It's really good. And the only reason I started using it is because, you know, remembered back in January, I moved all my workflows over to Linux, and it's just a much better browser on Linux than a lot of the other ones. I mean, yeah, we have Chromium on the Linux side of things, but I really was trying to avoid the Googles.
I mean, there's a reason why, like, it's the default, you know? On Linux, for the most part, is Firefox, right? Is that still a thing?
Yes and no. I mean, the GNOME project actually has their own browser called GNOME Web. It used to be called Epiphany, which is WebKit-based, or Blink. I'm not even sure what they've done this time. I think it's Blink now. And yeah, but Firefox is just better than it. I mean, for one thing, the bookmark manager in Epiphany is awful. There's not... Oh, I tried living with it. I can't do it.
But I mean, choice is good, so, and more choices make everybody better, so maybe Epiphany
Absolutely.
Will get better. But also browsers, since we're talking about browsers, apparently Microsoft Edge did something a little bit dirty, that has been doing something dirty, and today we're going to be talking about like data security and cybersecurity stuff, because I guess you can consider this, I thought about this last night as I was doing the prep work for tonight's for today's episode. I really should have called last week's episode TCEA Part 1, and this is actually TCEA Part 2, because I sat in a session about cybersecurity inside of schools and really just how much school districts are affected and are basically ineffectively ready for a cybersecurity attack, and it's gotten me a little paranoid, and so I kind of wanted to talk to you about it today. But we found some interesting news things that kind of go with it. It's like Microsoft Edge was letting Facebook run Flash without people's permission, you know?
You know, and one of the things I'm really curious about, though, is how in the world was Flash running in a browser that doesn't support plugins? Obviously, it does support plugins. And why did the least secure... I mean, I guess there is one more that's less secure. I mean, I guess they could have allowed Java to run. But why in the world did they allow Flash, of all things, on Facebook?
Well, I mean, it's Facebook. I guess they just threw Microsoft a lot of money and they let it happen. So Appleboy here is going to school Mr. Microsoft on something. Edge actually does support Flash. Edge supports Flash in the same way that Chrome supports Flash.
Is it using the Pepper thing?
Well, it's built in. Like, Google handles the updates for Flash inside of Chrome. Microsoft actually handles the Flash for Internet Explorer now and Microsoft Edge, I believe.
You know, the best way to handle Flash is
to not. Yeah, there you go. And actually, in your Microsoft Edge settings, there is actually a toggle that says Allow Flash.
Wow. So, yeah, that does tell you how much time I've spent in Edge.
Yeah. And Edge is actually a pretty good browser, too. Huh?
Well, it's now Blink, too.
Yeah. It's actually what I use in my virtual machine. I don't have any other third-party app, third-party browser in my virtual machine. I just use Edge, mainly just to save space and resources, because we all know how... I really need to put a link in show notes to that tweet that Crucial did about... They had this video of this guy eating this sandwich, and he was wearing like a Google Chrome logo on a t-shirt, and it was like, this is your RAM on Chrome. And it was like, this guy was just like gobbling down this sandwich, and this other guy wearing like an Adobe Photoshop logo on his t-shirt was trying to take some of the sandwich, which was like representative of your RAM, and like Google wouldn't let him have any sandwich. So it was just kind of, it was just really funny. I need to see if I can find that, but that's sort
That can definitely be the show art if we have a show art.
But yeah, I use Edge on my virtual machine for those reasons. But it's just crazy that things like that happen. And I mean, and going along with that, apparently your Nest thermostat has a microphone that you
weren't... Well, not the thermostat. This was actually the Nest security thing.
Oh, the Nest security. Well, I mean, it had a microphone that you weren't supposed to know about, is the whole point.
Yeah, and then it's not cool. I mean, it's the Nest Secure product. It was basically kind of like their security hub where other things could connect to.
Oh, the thing that doesn't really need a microphone has a microphone?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like your cable boxes having microphones.
That's just, it's the things that people, I mean, the privacy invasions that we let happen in our lives is just amazing.
Well, and to be fair to Google, I never would have had an issue with this having a microphone had they disclosed it for future updates to detect glass breakage.
Yeah, but it was basically said that
they didn't say anything.
We didn't tell you about it because you weren't supposed to know about it or something along those lines.
And I'm sure there's some sysadmins out there that had one of these at their house that was doing logging. I would love to see the amount of data coming out of this piece of hardware to see if they were actually doing anything with the audio.
And see, I didn't even know that my cable box had a microphone until you told me, which I'm glad that thing is gone now.
Yeah, and there was a lot of crazy things that had microphones for no reason.
I mean, and there's a reason why there's no Alexa device or Google Assistant in my home, and this is sort of for it. I mean, you've heard all those horror stories about Alexa's emailing your voice recordings to random people in your contacts list. I mean, it's just crazy.
Oh, goodness. Can you imagine the disaster that could come from some of that?
It's just crazy, the stuff. I mean, and it's all around us. I mean, it's like those user agreements and stuff that we just accept without reading. I mean, there's no telling what those things say. And what's ridiculous is, like, they have to post that stuff, but there's no, like, requirements for, like, the type of language they use in those things. And so they can make it as legalese as possible to make it where people don't want to read it. And so they're signing away all these rights to different things. And they really have no idea because it's so many pages and it's language in different, not that it's in a different language, but I mean, it's just the
it
way
might
they,
as well be.
Yeah. Just the way they're writing out their sentences and the words that they're using. They're like, you got to have like a master's degree in, business economic law to actually understand what it's trying to say. And so you don't really know what you're doing. And that's essentially what that TCA session that I went to about was about data security. And they kind of mentioned, it's like, who reads all those user agreements? And like, nobody raises their hand because they're just too hard to read. There's like no requirements for anything
to
read.
The iTunes one alone is what, 23 pages?
I mean, it's ridiculous. I know it's at least three whenever they have to make changes to it. And you have to like go through three different things. And so it's like, but if you don't accept this stuff, you can't do anything. And so I get that it's needed. I really do. And I know that it's kind of like a protection on the business end too, but I think there should be some requirements coming from somebody. I don't know who it would be, if it would be Congress or somebody, some government legislature that says,
I can see if enough of this stuff gets enough attention in the United States, us adopting kind of the similar approach that the European Union did with the GDPR.
Yeah, that's going to be a nightmare if the United States passes something like that, just because the way things work here.
Oh, man. I mean, it's going to be – the thing is, yes, we want – privacy, we want that, but we also want these services to exist.
And here's the kicker, we want these services to exist, but we don't want to pay for them.
Exactly.
And so when you use a free product like Facebook or even Google, you become the product. And we've talked about that many times before. I mean, it's just ridiculous that this and the whole like the data analytics thing with Facebook a while back, and it's like, I'm so glad I don't have a Facebook account anymore. And it's like it's getting harder not to have a Facebook account. It really
is.
No,
it's not. Well, not at all.
Well, it's if you don't like want if you don't care enough to participate in things. But it's like we have like this group at church, and they do all of their communication stuff through this Facebook group. And it's like, does nobody know how to use a text message or a group text or anything like that?
Well, believe it or not, our small groups does the same thing, but someone sends a text to my wife because they know we won't get on Facebook.
Well, that's good. And I've made it known that I don't have a Facebook account, that I will never see any of this stuff.
They're like, oh, you don't have one? Okay. And then it just keeps going.
But then so I get to the point, it's like, okay, well, I have a random email. Everybody should have a random email that they use to sign up for things that they don't ever want to see. And so I have that, and I'm like, well, I can sign up for Facebook with that email address. Don't give it my phone number. As hard as that is, I think that is possible.
Can you?
I think you can avoid giving it your cell phone number. I think you can. Sign up with like a fake name and just tell the guy that runs the group, hey, add this guy to the group, and that's me. And I would just be that random dude that nobody really knows who it is.
You're like, but don't friend it. Don't add it
to
everywhere else.
Exactly. And I would go through and like make sure that I'm completely hidden and friends of friends and all that stuff. And it's like, and I almost get to that point that I'm willing to do that just so I can be involved in this group and so I don't miss all this information. But then in the news, Facebook does something stupid and I don't want to do it anymore. That's really what it is. I mean, I just don't want to do it. I mean, and plus it's the whole thing. And I definitely wouldn't have it on my phone. I would probably only access the Facebook webpage like in my browser.
Through an incognito browser.
Yeah, through a private browsing session. Because, I mean, we've all heard and you've probably all seen it. If you have a Facebook account and you have Facebook on your phone and you talk to somebody about buying new towels or shower curtains, you're going to get ads for towels and shower curtains in your Facebook feed. I mean, it's just, I mean, but we're not listening to what you're saying on your phone.
Never will we listen.
It's happened to too many people for it to be like a coincidence.
I don't know how many times I've made the joke about in Google, I'll start typing what we were talking about to look it up. And I type two letters and it like finishes out the last sentence I said.
Yes. But. And it's like in Google, there's another thing that I don't really use anymore. I've switched to DuckDuckGo because I'm paranoid of Google now. I'm just paranoid.
Yeah.
I'm serious. That session, I mean, and it really wasn't anything major. I mean, they had this one guy who basically his job is to keep up with everybody in school districts all across the country, I think in colleges and K-12, who have all had like cyber attacks or whatever. And he gathers the information. He's putting like together these studies and he's the one that gathers all the data to give your statistics to give to people. Well, this is how many people got affected. This is how many people didn't get their data back after they paid the $1 million and things like that. And then they had like the chief. And you ever heard of this? A school district having a chief security, information security officer, a CISO?
I guess if you're big enough, I mean,
this was El Paso. I mean, they're big, but they're not that big, probably.
Well, they got a lot of money.
But so the CISO, apparently that's a thing now, was there. And he was kind of talking about the things that like El Paso School District went through. And I'm paranoid, dude. I mean, I'm remoting in and changing my passwords and everything because it made me really wonder. It's like, how secure is my district? I don't have things open in my firewall, but that is essentially my barrier.
All the firewall does is prevent an external source from establishing a connection. An internal source can still establish a malicious external connection.
Exactly. And that's why I'm going to put into the link in the show notes is some websites that I'm actually going to use for staff development this summer about like teaches your people how to check for phishing schemes in their email. Mm-hmm. And so there's like these quizzes that some people have put together. Firefox, which kind of like made me want to switch to the Firefox browser again because obviously it's a little bit more secure. They run a website, which I will put in the show notes. I think it's like monitor.firefox.com. Yeah. And it actually will.
It's wonderful.
You put in like your email address and a password that you may have used before. I don't know if Firefox is the one to do that, but I have another one. Have I been pwned or something? You can find out if your email and your passwords have been included in any of these data breaches. And it's like, I'm paranoid, dude. I'm like,
you know, that gives me a good idea. I think I should open another website and check for owned or something like that, where I ask people to put in their email address and password to see if it's been owned and I just keep it and I sell it.
There you go. I mean, that seems like a great idea. But so my question to you today is kind of what I want to talk about is, and what's really, really ironic, I guess, in a way, and I kind of knew this was coming, there's actually some bills in Texas legislature in session right now that, like, our service center guy emailed us about that said, hey, the education service centers have had to do this, like, cybersecurity, like, threat management framework kind of thing, and they have to, like, maintain a certain score out of, like, 5. As far as like data security and stuff, and there's like proposed bills in the House legislation of Texas that is going to require like school districts to possibly do the same thing. And so it's like perfect timing for this topic to talk about because apparently it may even be coming from the legislation that we have to do something about it.
And you know what? These are all good things because you and I both know the horrible architecture of some of these applications that we are required to use.
They are. I mean, and they're bad. But my problem that I'm worried about
let's just take our SIS, for example. It uses Sybase. Do we remember where Sybase came from?
I have no clue. I mean, it was an open source thing.
It was a fork of the original Microsoft SQL. It's broken. Oh. It's been broken, and it's not been fixed ever. I mean, it's awful. It's actually a laughing stock in the industry.
So why are we still using it? Why is our SIS vendor still using that?
Because they used it on the old product, and they wanted to use the same existing database in the new product. But then to make it better, they wrote it in Java.
Oh, that's always good fun. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous. But that's crazy that they're using a broken, hacked up product to manage student information. And our SIS system, student information system, which also our finance system runs on that stuff too. And so that's like all of our school data. And I guess that's like my biggest like blessing in a way that
we don't have it.
There's no data here on site as far as like social security numbers, addresses, phone numbers, things like that. None of that is here on site unless it's like printed out in a report on somebody's computer. And so I have that going for me at least. But but my whole problem is with this is it's like, and the thing that the guy in the email from the service center says is like the state's not providing any funding for this. I mean, to pull off the things that they're asking, it's like, is my firewall going to be enough? Is our limited IT staff that we have at our school district going to be enough to be able to handle like these requirements for the cybersecurity thing? And now granted, we just got this email, so we don't really know anything about it. I haven't even read the proposed bill, but I definitely will. But I mean, even before all of this, it's like to really be secure, is what we have to work with really enough? I mean,
but you know, I mean, that's one of the things you and I have been discussing ongoing is different deployment setups and different kinds of tools that we can utilize to make our infrastructure more bulletproof, more secure, more manageable, more automated to try to mitigate all this kind of headache.
I mean, and I know that we are just as secure as our weakest, I don't really want to say weakest, but I guess our least educated person as far as when it comes to like this stuff. I mean, is there a password 1234567 8 or 1234? I literally have, that's somebody's password here. 1234. That is their password.
Well, I got a question for you. How many student passwords are their student ID?
Every single one of them.
Exactly. Which, so I mean, already we have information correlation that we can use to do social engineering.
I mean, yeah. And so it's one of those things where you want to implement new policies, but there's like some backlash that you're probably going to get if you do it, because people don't like changing their passwords or they can't even remember their password.
Well, I don't remember who said it, but it's definitely true. There is a direct correlation and trade-off between security and convenience.
Yes, I believe it. I mean, 100%. And see, there's actually businesses that are making all of their money based on making it convenient for people to log into things. I mean, it's like ClassLink, Clever, all these services. It's like, and now granted, they're kind of using Google as a backend for all these things. But
hold up. You remember that really horrible Google hack that happened through Google Drive?
Yeah, I remember that Drive one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how secure your Google is one false click away.
Yeah, and so that's what these people are using for this information. And I mean, I have put off implementing one of those solutions, but the more and more online services that we're using for students to access different things, it almost becomes a necessity to use something like ClassLink or Clever. And so I have a feeling that it's coming, but I am so ingrained in separate passwords for every single service is just better.
Yes, I agree with that 110%.
But
how many of your users can do that?
That's the problem. And that's where we're as secure as a person's ability on staff to be able to handle that. And it's like,
yeah, and unfortunately we can't just turn on two-factor and expect them to use the authenticator apps, because they're going to delete their authenticator keys every time they get a new phone or something.
Yeah, and it's like, how do you, and I think the way Google does it, I think it's an all or nothing thing for the two-factor. And so
it is.
Do we really want to turn that on for students? What about the junior high and elementary kids who don't have their phones or not allowed to use their phones in school? How do we do the two-factor for them?
Well, first off, none of them should have them. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, they're not allowed to use those in school. Our high school kids will have it because we offer student Wi-Fi for them, and teachers use like services like Kahoot and things in class that they actually can use their phones to participate with. But what about, it's like, how do you implement two-factor authentication with a third grader? I mean, really? How do you do that?
I guess put fingerprint readers on everything.
I guess. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's just crazy. And so I'm a little bit worried about my setup here. I mean, just because. But maybe with this legislation will be a good thing because it will actually force me to force people to actually do the things that I've been wanting to do as far as me not knowing student passwords, forcing more complex passwords, except for an 8-character mm-hmm. Windows NTLM password, apparently, because those are broken. So you have to use 9 characters or more.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, and then that's part of some of the other things that I'm looking at as far as getting rid of some proprietary software. That way there's at least open auditing and whatnot going on it.
I mean, it's just I'm just a little bit worried about pulling this off. I ran into, because we always mention a school. There's always been a school in our district, in our area, that has gone through a cybersecurity attack. And he basically said that I just need to say his name, but I still won't do it because I ran into them at TCEA. But I still won't do it, Spencer. And they went through a tough time with some ransomware and some cryptography ransom stuff. And I don't want to go through that, man. I really don't. And so it's like, well, you have backups. Well, what happens if your backup, you start backing up the encrypted data? I mean, what if your backups get encrypted? I mean, and so, I mean, the good thing is that, like, after that, because of that, I mean, we all use that as sort of a learning experience to basically go through our firewalls to make sure that we don't have things open that don't need to be open. So, I mean, that's like a blessing in disguise in a way. I hate to say that I don't want to say that I'm glad that somebody we know got attacked because it forced us to make sure that we have all of our little ducks in a row. But we really should have had all of our little ducks in a row to begin with.
We should have. We shouldn't be losing our ducks.
But, I mean, when you inherit environments from previous people that may not have necessarily known things, and even then it's like, things change over time. It's like, how often are you in your network gear, to be honest with you? Are you in your network gear every single day? No.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you get in there, you set it up, you make it work, and then you don't touch it until something breaks. I mean, that's essentially what we do.
And to be honest, you shouldn't be in your network gear every day.
No. I mean, but it's almost like, I mean, that includes the firewall. And so we put these things in place that to do things 10 years ago that weren't necessarily, it's not that they were good things, but at the time they weren't bad things. Like opening RDP access to the public.
Just don't do it.
10 years ago, I mean, it's not a good thing, but it really wasn't as bad of a thing as it is now. Still not good practice, but I mean, it just, like you said, convenience over security. And so it's like, it's almost like we need to do regular audits of our configurations and stuff, but we buy new gear. Absolutely. And we just bring the config over, like the SIS database. It's like
I think we need to take it a step further. We don't need to do audits on our gear periodically. We need to have automated audits on our gear that are running all the time.
Hey, listeners, I just wanted to take a moment to let you know that our episode this week is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download by signing up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/educatingtech. Whether you decide to keep the subscription or not, the audiobook is yours to keep, but I think you'll keep the subscription. If you haven't tried audiobooks, you really should, especially since you're listening to a podcast. I started with podcasts and moved into audiobooks, and it was a natural progression for me. This week, I wanted to let you know about the Audible Originals deal they have going. Each month, you get an audiobook credit to pick a book of your choice, but Audible is also giving you a choice of 2 from a set of Audible Originals each month. So really, you're getting 3 audiobooks for the price of 1. So once again, sign up at audibletrial.com/educatingtech. And so maybe that's what we need to do. We need to start a business, a side hustle that we try to hack schools. and then we try to tell them, it's like,
I'm
going to
start with you.
Yeah, please don't. But it's like, we're going to hack schools, and then we're going to come back and be like, this is how we got in. This is what you need to do to fix it.
Well, you know what? I think a good place to start would be ETS.
Yeah, no kidding. start with that. But I mean, it's just, if you can't tell, I'm a little bit paranoid about this stuff now. I mean, we haven't.
You know, and it's okay to be paranoid. I mean, heck, this stuff is actually, I find this really interesting. I mean, I was reading an article today about the Docker daemon, how easily exploitable it is because it has to run as root. But you can actually execute shell commands directly through the Docker daemon, and it's more dangerous than giving a user an actual root password because it doesn't even log its transactions. So things can happen, and you not even know it happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like everything is broken. You should just assume everything is broken.
And that's partially, you know, that crazy stuff that I was telling you about this week that I've been going through it, because it seems like it might be the answer.
Is to push out sandbox. Basically, you're sandboxing everything you could possibly sandbox in your system.
Yeah, and I'm even going a step further than that in making the actual underlying OS immutable. So it is an image read only OS, and all the user land applications are run through individual sandboxes and namespaces.
Yes, and if our listeners don't understand what maybe a sandbox is, because you're not so much into the programming thing, but a sandbox is kind of like your application runs in like this space that's created just for this application, and essentially it can't talk to anything else outside of that one little space. Think of it.
No, and they're wonderful.
Think of it as like the little sandbox you had outside your house with the little wooden barriers. I think they were landscape timbers back in the day.
I think the reason they got called sandboxes, and this may be a little gross, but this is why they were called sandboxes. All right, you had your sandbox, you're playing in there. A cat poops in it. That's your virus. You can just dump the sand out and not worry about it.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, it's gross, but that's exactly true. I mean, you just dump the sand out and you put new sand in it and you're good to go. So basically, you just close and reopen the application and you started from scratch. Which is great. And truthfully, I mean, that's easier said than done. I mean, you can just read the articles about the struggles that developers have on the Mac App Store, because one of the requirements to put your app on the Mac App Store is it has to be sandboxed. It has to be cut off.
By golly, it should be.
It has to be cut off from the rest of the world. And things like what I use to record, like Audio Hijack and some other things, it's like it needed to integrate so much into the system to be able to pull things off that there was just no way that it could be on the Mac App Store. But Microsoft Office is there now.
Fortunately, there are some really awesome solutions that are coming out that are going to be able to make things a little more easier for developers to implement advanced hardware capabilities within their sandboxes. One of them is portals. And I know the Fedora team's working on portals right now, because they're with Fedora Silverblue, they're moving everything towards this. And so they're going to have portals to gain network access and portals to do audio access, those kind of things.
So basically, sandboxing like system resources in a way.
Oh, dude. The only thing, everybody should go read about Fedora Silverblue. Or another one is EOS. Endless OS was another one that took the same path. And they're the only two right now, but I think they're the future of operating systems as far as security, and they're going to solve the problem right.
Seems very interesting. So to wrap this up today, we've been talking for like 30 minutes, and really we haven't really talked about anything, I feel like. But I do.
Well, that's what we do.
I want to give our listeners maybe some quick like takeaway things that maybe they could do. And now, granted, I'm no expert. I'm no security expert. I'll probably have to go through some things to be a little bit more secure. So I guess if we were to give anybody some advice, one, go through your firewall and make sure that you do not have any ports open to the public that are not needed at all. Like anything.
Yeah, if it's not a service that has to be open to the public, don't open it.
And then if for whatever reason, if your air conditioner people want an RDP port open, do the thing in Windows where you change the RDP port from 389 to something else, and then do
also get a list of IPs that they're going
to
come from.
Yes, and you can whitelist those IPs to get in. And you can map the non-3389 port to, I mean, you can leave it 3389, just do like a port forward or something in the firewall, I think is what it's called. So you can you can port forward like 4713 to 3389, and so you leave 333 whatever it is. I just forgot it. I just lost
3389.
Yeah, 3389. You can leave that essentially. So if someone's doing an IP scan or an angry IP scan, isn't that what it was called? On your system, they won't see that that port is open. They'll see the 1400 open, and they won't really know what that is because the 3389 is actually probably what they're looking for. Do the same thing with SSH, and there should be no Telnet open to the world at all.
No. In fact, there shouldn't be any SSH open to the world at all.
But more than likely, it's probably a third-party vendor that has to do something that we can't do ourselves, like HVAC or cafeteria servers or something, that they need access to something over RDP or SSH is really the only reason why we have those things open. So definitely get the whitelist, find out what IP addresses they're going to come from, and you could definitely whitelist those things, and so that would keep it just a little bit more secure, and then try to do a port forward if you can, if you can convince them to let them know that that's an okay thing to do. One thing I really ought to do is I ought to look at your password policy and your group policy as far as like password complexity. Did I say that word right the first time? The password settings? I don't want to try to say it again. Make sure that like it's a good amount of characters, special characters, uppercase, lowercase, all those sorts of things. And the one thing I'm definitely going to do is like this summer when we do our staff development technology training, I'm going to kind of develop my own little thing as far as like maybe training our people to be a little bit more, I guess, proactive when it comes to this stuff as far as like their passwords and stuff. And really, it's not just for up here at the school. It's just for life in general. I mean, like,
absolutely. I mean, they have more online life outside of school than they do at school.
Your Facebook account password doesn't need to be the same as your bank account password, you know?
And it doesn't need to be your kids' names either.
So, yeah. But you remember, it's like, I remember hearing about somebody that they would actually, like, load a live version of Linux from a CD or jump drive just to do their bank account stuff.
Which is not a bad idea.
I mean, that's like a whole lot of extra work. And when now you just do it on your smartphone and you take pictures of checks and send them to your bank account, that's exactly what I do. I mean, so hey.
And then you take that picture and hope it wasn't synced out to all your cloud storage. And
yeah, no kidding. I hope it. Well, every time I use the Chase app to do that, it doesn't end up in my photo library. So I'm guessing they don't save it to the photo, which I'll give.
We might not know. It may be in the terms and service that they save a copy of every check.
Probably do. Well, they kind of have to do because they
reserve the right to use their signature on your behalf.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, so just check like passwords, firewall settings. And so, like I said, I'm going to develop some training materials from our staff. I'll throw those links in the show note to those phishing quiz things that I found, or actually I didn't find them. I was told about them in the session. And it actually goes through the thing. It's like teaching them how to like hover their mouse over the link to see like what link it's actually going to. So if they get a link,
you know, we forget about those small things that we take for granted. They might not even know.
Yeah. And it's like, and then I'm just going to ingrain on them. Do not open a PDF or a zip file in your email attachment that you're not expecting, or you don't know who it's from. Actually, if you're just not expecting it, whether you know the person or not, if you're not expecting a PDF or a zip file attachment, do not open it. Because apparently,
pick up the phone, call them.
Yeah, because apparently that's how everything comes. I think there's actually one school district that doesn't even allow zip attachments.
I don't.
I think that's great. I mean, we've had to allow it for like FEMA stuff because they want all their images zipped up and sent to them. It's just,
I know, and they end up being ridiculously large because we want all 500 in one file.
Yeah, exactly. Or the one time they wanted it on a PDF document. They wanted me to put all the pictures on a PDF document. And so you actually helped me write this little Apple script thing to actually resize all the images and so that I can just take them in a preview and just print them as a PDF. And it just,
did I?
Yeah, you helped me do that. I actually have that saved. Okay. So when I have to do it again for the next time we flood.
way to have some positive thinking.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I know we haven't really given you too many solutions today. I just kind of wanted to talk to you about
my
concerns.
Throw something out here. I think this topic is something that we need to continue discussing with schools, especially with the legislation that could possibly come down. And it almost seems like an opportunity for us to have like an educating technology community event where we design the bulletproof network and then take a step back and go, okay, what can we actually implement for the cost that we have and what sacrifices can we make to get this in our school but still gain the security benefits of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, because apparently if this legislation passes, we're going to have to do something. And the words that he put in his email to us was to maintain their 3.5 out of 5 that they're required to do right now. It takes money and staff to pull off. And that is two things I know your district is lacking in and my district is lacking in, that we're not able to have a full-time security person that's just over, like, information security. It's just going to be...
As long as they don't, like, coerce me into joining some security co-op, I'll be okay.
But, I mean, it's just, it's one more hat that we're going to have to wear and be able to pull off on our own resources. And so... I'm a little concerned about it, but something needs to be done. So I kind of want the legislature. It's like from a human standpoint. Well, let me rephrase that. From a like non-network admin in a school district, I want something like that to pass because I think data security and cybersecurity stuff is important. But as somebody that's going to have to be in charge of implementing it without the funds and staff to be able to do it, I'm not looking forward to it. So it's kind of like a catch-22 in a way.
Well, let's come up with the educating technology bulletproof package and we could travel the road,
run everything in Linux sandboxed.
Well, first off, that's what we're going to do. We're going to run immutable OSs, and then everything is going to be containerized within other shielded virtual machines. And
we'll start with our business information management class, where they have to teach Microsoft Office, and we'll have to do this.
Gosh, that needs to go away.
Well, we're going to save that for another day. I do want to talk to you about that kind of stuff too. Basically, I'm tired of teaching apps. Let's teach concepts.
Yes.
But okay. So let's just stop here. I mean, we're before we
got some awesome links in the show that we didn't talk about,
but we'll make sure we'll put those things in the show notes. But yeah, so it's just something to be thinking about with your school districts, your home network, your life on the internet in general, is being a little bit more aware of your surroundings, and your internet, usage. I also think that, while we're thinking about it, I think like digital citizenship curriculum needs to be mandatory in schools. Just to maybe try to teach some of these concepts to our students at a younger age. So maybe, just maybe, they do things the right way when they get on Snapchat.
I'm not going to tell you, but that's already a requirement that none of us are doing.
Oh, well, okay then. then I'll pretend I didn't say that. But that's our show for this week. For the links and show notes for this episode, you can visit educatingtech.net/62. You can send us any questions, comments, or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter with @educatingtech. In our show notes, you can find a link in our show notes to join our Discord. You can come talk to us about this or anything that you have going on in your district. I'd love to hear from you as far as like things that you implement now and things that you'd like to implement better. This is not a shame fest. We just want to be here to help each other out. You can follow Chris on Twitter @Feeks, and I'm @TwistofMatt. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech and leaving us a review and or rating in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast client service something that you're into, just to help us grow our audience. And thanks again for Audible for sponsoring our episode. And that's it for this week. We'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.